There he is. There he is.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. I can hear you nice and clear.
All right.
Good to go. How's it going?
All right. So I'll start off by throwing out a hearty apology to all of, our handful of fans or however many people will be out there.
There's no need.
Waiting the Ram and Sam podcast. Ram and Sam have been on hiatus for a while.
You know, if one of them, if one person had asked, maybe she'd feel bad. But I don't think anybody even noticed we were off the air for a bit. That's okay. That's okay, though.
But regardless of interest, we're here to put in that work and do this job, and that's to raise awareness about the ridiculousness of the outside world, whether people want to hear it or not. So let's get it going. So Ram, why don't you kick things off? How are you feeling these days?
What do we decide about the global climate?
What's your take on the world today? What's that?
I think I'm going to throw it back to you. I want to hear your questions.
Kick it off. Whatever's on your mind, go for it.
I got too many foolish opinions to kind of begin with. I don't know.
Let's hear them. Start with one.
Which one? What's the most interesting thing? Come on, we can't just spend the whole episode debating what to talk about, right?
All right, since the American election is the big ticket thing going right now.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, since the American election is the big ticket item right now, let's maybe delve into that. Mm-hmm. So what are your feelings about what's going on and Bernie getting the shaft?
That's such a wide open question. You got to narrow it down a bit. Like we got to begin with some fundamentals here. Like, how do you feel about the way things are going? I guess the first question is, are you confident that Trump is going to get beat? Do you think he's going down irregardless?
You know, against popular opinion, I guess, I thought Bernie would have been the obvious, been the most, polarizing candidate to pull votes away from Trump. Mm-hmm. You know, to me personally, Bernie was the clear foil that would give voters, space to choose between, what's been going on and how it could be. Yeah. Biden, I like him. I mean, he's better than what's there now. But to me, he's just too center and waffles around that center a little too much. He's either, a red Democrat or a blue Republican, and he waffles there. I think I saw this, this policy bulletin that showed where each of them stands on the major issues, climate change, Medicare for all, gun control, all these kind of things, all the way down the list, the Green New Deal, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, Biden was way more with Trump than I'm comfortable with. I mean, that's just the honest truth.
So the question, I guess, with Biden, and it was already sort of played out, which is the scary part, was that if they put forward a very accomplished sort of politician, a high achiever type.
Like a Pete Buttigieg type.
Like a Tracy Flick type, from a group of same sort of overachievers who have been running shit for the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Like the same type of person, and they come forward and they say, oh, no, I'm going to fix it, but I'm not going to change anything. You just have to accept what we're putting forward.
Yeah.
Like, does Biden have a chance? Like, is there any possibility? And considering now what we're seeing is, I think there's going to be a boycott. I think Sanders' base, a good chunk of his vote are not going to vote even. Now, no one's going to come out and, volunteer for Biden. That's not happening.
Yeah.
Not the way they are for Sanders and stuff. He doesn't have any grassroots support in that sense. So
here's my take on that. So a couple of things. You said a lot of things there, and there's a lot of things mm-hmm. there I want to touch on. Like, to me, like, it's almost ironic. Like, yes, I would have thought that, like, and I, for the record, was with Bernie the whole way. Like, I think in this day and age, the more, like, you know, in tune yeah. these people are with the needs of the people, the way that what they really need, like, the United States, they might hate the name, but at the end of the day, they're a welfare state. Welfare state's mm-hmm. job is to protect the people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, the number one job.
You take it a step further. Sir, I just want to make one point on the welfare state.
Yeah.
You take it a step further. The most important duty of the United States as an entity is to protect the stability of the nation that their dollar and commerce all depends on, right?
Well, that's how it's engineered, but I don't think that's what the duty of the nation is.
No, it is. It is the duty of the nation. It is the duty of the nation. That's because for the health and well-being of the citizenry, you have to, like, protect the nation, right? Like, it's
right. But those two things are not mutually exclusive. Sorry.
No.
What I'm trying to say is that, you know, like, what's been going on, and I think unfortunately we might see this with Biden too, although mm-hmm. not to the degree that's there, but, like, I don't want leadership to be a shill for the corporate, you know, for corporate America or corporate whatever, right? Like, and this whole nonsense that, like, you know, Medicare for all is like a socialist thing or a communist thing. I'm like, are you serious right now? That should be the only job of the welfare state at the end of the day, the health and well-being of your citizens. Everything else, pretty much conversation, at least in my book. Like you don't, I don't need the state per se to dictate, you know, have control over my body. I don't need the state to have, like, in the sense that, you know, what decisions I can make.
The problem is, Sam, there's no line there. Like, you can't say that because, like, okay, so what happens if the state, okay, for the health and well-being of the society and the people, they have to control over your body. They got to legislate over things you can do and whatnot, right?
No, but there's a way to do it. There's a way not to do that. You can do like every other social democracy in the world, every other first world nation in the world.
Yeah.
You give them that safety net and you let them make their decision within that net, right?
Yes. Yes, of course. Right. Like, so
that's what I'm saying.
That is the most important. What I was saying, and it's not really pertinent to anything we're kind of talking about, but the most important thing of a state can do is maintain stability,
right?
Like, it's just, otherwise there is no state. You don't have any house because there's no property rights, there's no health. Everyone has to, like, you know, claw and fight to be able to eat anything.
Yeah.
So if that's the thing that, like, I suppose that Sanders is pushing for, right? Like, to kind of, like, put some reinvestment back into the state and take some of the easy money out of the game, right?
Like, right. And I agree with that. Unfortunately, that whole message, that whole endeavor is completely lost in translation. They're treating Sanders almost like an anarchist who wants to destroy America's institutions, whereas in reality, he's reinvesting in the core of the institution. Like, the institution at the end of the day boils down to the people, regardless of what form that takes.
Yeah.
So I just don't get how this message, how it can be radical, how it can be deemed progressive, radical, or even socialist. Like, Medicare for all it should be a God-given right. Like, that is, like, number one. Everything the state does after that is 2, 3, 4, 5 down the list.
You know what's a crazy thing that happened this election, right?
What's that?
If you were watching did you watch much of the debates? Or...
I did. I didn't see all of
it. You probably did, right? So you saw the way they framed protecting private health care.
Yeah.
Right? So hold on. Let me work this out, right?
Okay,
so
please.
The way it came about here, this private health care system that they have down there. And so, yes, about half the country is covered under some kind of system,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, they've got it through their employer. Most of those people still have incredible co-pays, and if they could still be bankrupted by a medical emergency, right?
Yeah.
But there's a few people that sit on top of the world with possibly the greatest healthcare that's ever existed, because they have access, because they get the best that money could buy in the country that's probably the most advanced medically in the history of humanity, right? That's that trade-off. So in the debates, they would always say, if you're for Medicare for all, then you want to take away people's health care, right?
Yeah.
And so how can you even and they would try to, obviously Bernie would try and frame it such that, no, everybody pays less. It becomes less of a part of the system. But he doesn't address the fact that there's a small group of people that want to maintain that benefit. They want that, you know, that healthcare that's going to get them potentially to 120 years old, right? Like, and just, like, be able to have MRIs on a dime drop, you know, whatever. Like, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Now, and they can't say, like, the progressives can't say to these people that, you know, no, we're going after platinum healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going after sort of the several tier system where some people are kings, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm not so certain what my point was, but you kind of see what I'm saying.
I do see what you're saying. So I'll say this, like, here's the thing. Yes, the people who have good healthcare in the States are kings.
Yeah.
And they rationally do not want to give that up. And I'll cite a personal example if we got the time, and I think we do. So last year, as you know, or as I don't know, I'm pretty sure you know, me, my girl, and my mother-in-law went down to Disney World, right?
Yeah.
And we went in January, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently down there in January, just like it is here, I guess not apparently, like it's a fact, like we're all the same continent or whatever, but it's flu season there. So unfortunately, I got a little sick, but only for like a day. Abanti was sick for 1 to 2 days. But unfortunately, my mother-in-law was sick for like 3, 4, 5 days.
Oh my God.
To the point where she needed to be hospitalized.
Yeah, terrifying.
And we dehydration, were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We have to go and work out the financials and stuff later. I was a little comforted by the fact that, you know, Canada.
You didn't get the traveler's insurance.
Well, that's my point I'm going to. Like, luckily, we went before this ridiculous Ford government put this travel insurance change in there that now you need it and it's OHIP's not, doesn't cover you down there. OHIP for.
So you guys.
For the Americans out there.
You're covered.
For the Americans out there, OHIP is like the Canadian healthcare, universal healthcare for the province of Ontario. So anyway, we went down there. She got sick. We had to go to the hospital. You get to this hospital and it's like, so it was in Florida. It was like another Disney resort. It was like the most beautiful hospital I've ever seen.
Yeah.
They took her in right away. She got all the tests away on the spot, whatever.
It's more comfortable than your home.
It's definitely more comfortable than our hotel room. So they at the end of the day, as what they were checking on her, it took a couple of days. They had to put her in this like 2-bedroom suite almost. Like there was like a 1-bedroom, like there was a 1-room, big huge room where she was in. Where if you contrast that with the you know, the other places here, it's like you put 4 or 5 patients in there. On sometimes, sometimes you can pay extra for private rooms. But anyway, it was this massive one room for her with like TVs everywhere, nurses checking on you every 5 minutes, that kind of thing. And in that same room, there was a door that we had our own private living room and another bedroom if people wanted to sleep. And we were, it was like my basement, like, or your living room or whatever, like that, like its own other just thing, big screen TV, everything.
Let's take a second to acknowledge one thing. All this is completely unnecessary, right? Like no one needs it, but it's gorgeous. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Like it really feels, I mean, if you can pay for it, like if it's covered, especially, right? Like if it's through your benefits package,
right?
You're one of the last lucky Americans in the world that has company insurance at that level without the crazy deductibles either that would knock you out.
Right.
So, you know, like 5,000 down even is more than, you know, anyone's willing to pay considering a lot of these procedures are, you know, expensive.
Yeah. So we're there. And they gave her some Theraflu, and they said, like, take this, your symptoms will be cut down, whatever. You just have a very serious flu. But when we got the bill, it was like 20K plus for like 4 or 5 days. And I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to do here? Well, at least we have OHIP. We'll have to claim it back. But they were like, okay, so here's the the system we have here. If you have insurance, it's going to be $25K. If you don't have insurance, we'll try to give you a friendly, understanding Christian discount. Because it was like Celebration Hospital. It was a great hospital, but I think it's like sponsored by the church or something. And they're like, we'll give you the Christian discount and knock it back to 15K. Yeah. But 15K, you have to pay that before you leave. So I was like, well, what are we going to do? We have to pay them this thing and figure out the financials after. So what ended up happening, I was like, to my mother-in-law who works for Walmart, I was like, do you have an insurance card for Walmart? And she's like, yeah. I was like, do you have that with you here? And she's like, no, I left it at home. Yeah. And I was like, okay, let's see if we can get the number off that. So she called the store here in Canada, or somehow she got the number from Walmart head office or whatever. We gave that number to the people at the hospital. They're like, yeah, you're covered. So the whole 25K ended up being covered. So what does that tell you? If you have it, great for you. If you don't, here's, you owe us 15K. And and I don't know if you know, and I'm sure you do, but like the, so what, so two things. So what does that say? That says, like, I understand now why the states, like, you know, the vast majority of bankruptcies, not even slightly, the vast majority are medical-based emergency bankruptcies, right? Like, so to me, it seems counterintuitive that a country like that, that cares so much about economics, this, that, right? Like, it's not healthy for the state to have such a large number of bankruptcies, right?
So two things.
So let me just finish the last point. So it was just glaring. The difference between if you have healthcare and not. And it is also, to be fair, to the rich kings of the states who have, you know, great healthcare. Yeah, it's amazing for you. If I had that, it would be difficult to give that up. But I think, you know, there is...
But could you... See, this is what I'm going to say. Okay, this is my cynical take. I just want to throw this in quickly. I think the number of Americans who secretly... You know how, like, when we were kids and your mom, your parents would say, like, oh, you should eat that because there's starving kids or whatever, right? In another country. Yeah. Part of you felt a little comfort that you weren't that starving kid, right? So part of the American system is the people that are insured are... They have that moment when they go to the doctor and they also hear these stories. They watch movies like Sicko and whatnot, and they see the misery inflicted on a growing number of Americans based off this economic system, right? Like bankruptcy and all that stuff. But they feel there's a catharsis there. They feel good that it's not them, right? That they are within that. They are covered within this. And like, you know, I guess at the end of the day too, like it is a leap of faith to go to a universal system away from something that you already know. Right now, the problem, the cynical thing, I think, not that that's not cynical, what I sort of just outlined already, that people are maintaining healthcare because they like the fact that other people are suffering and they're not. But the other part of that is that I think that's the voting block that the Democratic centrists are speaking to. And that's why that message plays, where they could say,
yeah,
like he wants to take away your healthcare. Like he wants to take your options away from you. And there's enough people within the Democratic primary to stop, you know, any kind of logical conversation around something that is economically necessary.
Yeah.
Because what's happening is like, it's just the percentage that goes to the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. So, like, I mean, they always talk about the per capita numbers, how we spend way less per person in Canada for a much better system overall, right?
Yeah.
And but they, all that extra money that's being thrown into like executives and these companies that, you know, run the administration of the insurance, that's easy money. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And like if one day, if tomorrow the government said, okay, here's a couple of you guys, you control the water supply. You can set the price and decide who gets it and whatnot. And people will have to pay what you did. Those guys would make a killing, right? Like, I mean, so in the States, they have this beautiful system where a couple guys make a lot of money. off something that people have to use. You know? So anyway.
So here's what I've been pondering on this for a while, and I'm glad we're talking about it. I actually have a semi-solution or something that I'd put forward, you know, is to sort of bridge the gap between what's needed and what is there in order to make it more palatable.
Small caveat, I'm just going to say, like, right now, there are no solutions this primary. Like, the Democratic Party is going up in flames. But okay. Continue.
We'll get to that in a second. But my solution on healthcare would be something along the lines of this. If I was elected, right, so say I was the Democratic president, what I would do and what I would say is this. I would say, okay, we're going to do universal healthcare for all. And here's how we're going to pay for it. Because a lot of the thing is how we're going to pay for it. I wouldn't automatically cut. I wouldn't automatically like assume or want or allow for companies that are already paying for this super high care for their employees to then stop paying that. I would expect that whatever
like that amount?
Current contributions companies have allotted towards insurance, they just remit that to the government rather than to the employees directly. So I think that's missing in this health.
Yeah.
I guess that's what's.
You'd have to nationalize. And the thing is, too, you would start pragmatically. You nationalize the insurance bureaucracy. You basically appoint a czar in charge of the whole damn thing.
Well, they
already
have. That's
who
what,
has
that's
like
what,
power
sort
to
of,
to every.
Sort of working with the Obamacare thing is that, you know, there is that.
No, but like they don't have the ultimate power of being like, you know, going in, shutting like veto power.
Yeah, like you have to tell every insurance company that if you want to sell in the States, pre-existing conditions are covered, but you'll make that money back because everybody's going to be contributing this. There's no opt-out. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
Right. So everybody pays. Yeah. And then the companies that are paying toward currently now, whatever their budget is, that must be frozen and then reallocated to the government directly. So I don't think you have a huge funding.
The problem is that issue, like it shoots in the foot. It punishes the people who sort of have been paying into healthcare. So companies that have sort of, skimped out these last few years, they benefit, right? Because they wouldn't have the same outlay as, you know, a company.
No. But the outlay is the same. I think that's what you're missing. The outlay. Say they spend, you know, I'm not going to give a number, but 5% of their budget on healthcare for their employees, whatever their expenditures are, it's 5% toward that.
But let's say there's a company, but I'm saying there's another company spending 2% of their budget. Right. So the company that's paying 5% gets punished in that scenario. Right. Like, whereas the company that was 2% that was trying to like shortchange, you know, taking away benefits from the employees and stuff like that.
Then how about an average? How about you take all the Fortune 500 companies or whatever the companies are, and even the smaller ones, you ask them to submit by X deadline 60 days.
I don't think you do it through companies. You do it like in Canada. It's payroll tax.
But that,
right? Like
you can definitely do that too. But I'm just saying so that there's a guaranteed remittance there. You could do it in the sense that at least to start.
But what do you mean? What do you mean guaranteed? Like, what are you worried about in terms of the starting revenue?
Because it's going to take a lot of revenue.
Like,
beginning.
I mean, don't buy into. First of all, don't buy into the damn, you know, the bullshit about like there's no money.
There is money. And that's garbage. Obviously that's
you
phase
saw,
two.
You saw the
phase
print,
two is obviously you got to roll back, roll up, I guess, these corporate tax. Like, I'm not saying to put them back where they were.
No, not even corporate tax. I'm talking about I'm literally talking about that. You know, you print a bit of this, right? Like you do the same thing you did for the Wall Street bailout, but you do like a government sort of works program, like a New Deal type thing, the Green New Deal, basically.
Right.
And so the money is not an issue. And especially since money that's spent well that goes into infrastructure and builds a proper economy leads to that stability we were talking about earlier that maintains your like property rights and everything else, your commerce and your industry, everything else that depends on, you know, people not shooting each other in the streets.
Right. But this, like, I know what it would cost to start up. There's a huge startup. It's like an investment, like any other investment, right? You're investing in healthcare, right?
Yeah, but it's not it's not really, if it's done correctly, sort of almost with a communist mentality.
Well don't use that word.
Like nationalizing companies
would never
and stuff.
Get off the ground.
This is the problem, though. This is the problem, because it literally is going to take that. You need people to like come to Washington, for instance, and explain their business and like, okay, here's the keys to it. And then behind the scenes, you work out the financials, because yes, like you can't screw all these companies. Like you can't just take their capital away from them and not have like a little bit of a rebound, you know, like something.
But you're not here's what I'm back with. Okay, so let me finish. Give me 2 minutes to indulge myself here. Right? So here's what I would say.
But, yeah.
Take whatever they're contributing now. And if you say it's unfair to the company paying 2% as opposed to the company paying 5%, like,
no, I'm just saying it's not a great plan in the sense that like it should be just
fine. But let me finish.
It should
I'm
be
saying
much more.
Okay. You're not giving me these 2 minutes. Give me these 2 minutes to just talk this out. Okay. So 2-5, fine. You could either take the direct thing. That's the easier approach, or you could present an average. You calculate what the Fortune 500 companies pay, or whatever all the other companies pay. You come up with a number and say, okay, 3% on average is what companies pay. You remit that directly back to the government to help fund this program. There's not a net loss out of them for that, right? Like, it's the exact same amount of money. It's just going directly to the government to fund.
Okay, so all I'm saying, though, is you need a better universal
system. And I'm with you.
So how do you do that? How do you do that? How do you do that going forward? How do you do that for a company that just starts up?
Right.
What do they remit?
It could either be the average, or I agree with you, over time, moving to a payroll tax type thing directly. And of course, phase two, if I'm being realistic, you gotta put back the money into the system. Like, you gotta put some of that corporate tax, like, that's bankrupting America as it is right now. You're getting $1 trillion deficit.
Yeah,
and I wonder
agree
where all these Tea Partiers are now. Right. And now that there's a $1 trillion deficit in 1 year, which has never happened in American history, like, where are these Tea Partiers now? Right. Like, is racism that much more popular than
they're just printing money, like
fiscal economics?
Trump is just printing money. I mean, like, why should Trump get to print money for his things and we can't do it for healthcare? Right. Like,
well, I don't know if you saw today, and maybe we can segue into this next. Like, did you see his proposal to bail out the shale industry and the leisure industry? Like, how ridiculous is that?
No, I missed that. I mean, at this point, like, what's surprising? I suppose, though, it makes sense, though. Like, it does. Like, the economics of it, like, it's okay. So here's where you can get a little into it. Is that like it's mostly low income people. Like, as long as he's bailing, as long as that money goes to like workers, it gets back into the economy, right?
Dude, he's bailing out the companies themselves. He's not bailing out any workers.
Yeah, okay. If he's just bailing out the companies,
that's what he's doing.
Them, like,
and he's saying you companies
going
paid
through coronavirus.
Yeah, well,
that's
he
insane.
Is insane, and that's what's happening.
That's
and
insane.
In addition to that, he's also saying, okay, oh yeah, I'm going to suspend payroll or the payroll tax until the end of the year. I'm like, how ludicrous is this? Like, you don't fix the economy by ensuring that the wealthy are taken care of or that nothing changes for them. And like, this is ludicrous to me.
Yeah.
If you want to do anything, stimulate the people who are actually, who can't go to work and feel it paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, but Trump.
Right. And like this, at some point, someone has to, like, I'm not saying they're not saying it, but they have to say it in a way that like it, the message is clear, right? Like, this to me, I don't know, you and I are big Simpsons fans, or at least we were in its heyday. Like, this whole thing is reminiscent of, you know, the Homer running for the trash commissioner, the thing, promising everything under the sun, yet destroying the system. But taking it a step further by only protecting his friends and his corporate interests. Like, I'm just shocked. Yeah. And who benefits in the leisure industry bailout? Well, him and his shitty hotel chain, right? Like, I just don't know what to say anymore.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, he's getting paid. Like, he's...
No, he's not smarter than he seems. He's just...
I guess.
He's just, like...
Maybe.
So he has... What he has going for him, I'll tell him this. he has the evil Jean Chrétien vibe going for him. For our American audiences out there, Jean Chrétien was the former Prime Minister of Canada in the late 90s and a little bit of the early 2000s. Got away and doing the most ridiculous things, yet he was like the real Teflon Don. Nothing would stick. People would just keep voting for him. There was no scandal too big that he could not overcome. Trump is like the evil version of that, where no matter what happens, people are just willing to look the other way. And that's why I'm getting back to my other point. Maybe that can be the theme of this pod after the healthcare thing. Like, is racism that much more powerful than common sense and fiscal stability? Because the only reason I can see people turning a blind eye to his stupidity and his tanking of the economy and, you know, the real tanking of the economy. I'm talking about the deficit, something that, you know, Republicans, conservatives pride themselves on, right? Like, there was a whole Tea Party movement based on there's too much money bleeding in Washington. Yet there's $1 trillion deficit this year. Nobody's saying anything about that. So my question is, like, the only thing that he stands for that he has actually delivered is his intolerance of minorities and racism at the border. Is that what America has come to, where that is more powerful than, you know, common sense, civility, diplomacy, and, you know, fiscal stability? What's your take on that?
I think, like, I just don't, like, I don't know. I guess I'm more cynical these days. Like, it's just such a simple game at the top. Just a bit of the amount of money they steal from the treasury and, like, the guys who are connected to that and whatnot. The money that's being made off this stupid fence. I don't think he's racist. Like,
are you serious? He's the tool that he can
use.
Like,
it's not. Okay. So what's your point, though?
That's my question to you.
Is it scary? Is it scary racism? Are we talking like Holocaust type shit? Are we talking like slavery? Like, are we talking, you know, hanging people?
I'm talking about
crosses
it's
burning
as racist
on fences.
As it can get in an era of modernity. That's what I'm saying. It is.
But what's the point of like harping on?
Well, that's my question. But I'm saying
more so than just the class shit. Like,
unless
it's
you
just
see
theft.
Something
like it's
right.
It's
so
theft.
I'm saying.
And a lot of poor people tend to be, you know,
racialized,
right? Like, that's what it is. It's just they're taking advantage of the poor, and like the people who have a harder time, sort of, you know, having a voice for themselves, right?
But you didn't answer my question. My question is: you know? Has America become a place where racism, and I'm talking about the most racism allowable under in a first world in an era of modernity? Has America become that place, such to the point where they're willing to look the other way on civility, human decency, fiscal stability?
No. Like, it's not racism. Like, they don't. It's I don't want to say self-interest, because a lot of it's actually justified. It's a bit of like self-protection. It's like their jobs, their neighborhoods, and like, you know, I mean, the a big issue that the progressive left doesn't really acknowledge very much is like the influx of refugees and immigrants brought in through, you know, good intentions of helping people have a better life. The burden of that was put on small towns and people having to, like, you know, compete with bigger pools of labor. You know, it's not New York or like Toronto, like that. You know, you really feel this. It's like in the places where people can afford, like new immigrants can afford to kind of live, and they will take the jobs that you had for less and work harder and not say anything. And if they're undocumented, they're gonna take less than the minimum wage, right? Like and so that. You know, the fight for jobs and stuff is—it's not like it's people fighting for the closing of the border. A lot of the times, it's not because they ostensibly hate, you know, like people of other colors and stuff. It's just that they want to, like, protect what's theirs. Going back to even like Medicare and whatnot, right? Like, there's that selfish aspect. it's not racism. Like, it's not hatred in the sense of, like, you know, like a nasty bigot or whatever. I wouldn't say that. And that's what the country even does. Like, I don't think they see it that way, because they also see in Trump's administration, he's got people from
all walks of life. No, he does not. Walks alike, he has Ben Carson, who doesn't know what he's doing in the Department of Housing.
Yeah, that's still...
And that's it. Still, that's like, his token guy.
That's still, like, that's... No, but he's got, like, he's got brown people. He's got Latino, Latin. Yeah, he does. Like, he does. You even saw today, like, when he came out with his coronavirus, there was, like, an Indian lady. There's, like, the Surgeon General is a black guy.
All tokenism. Did you see that CDC gong show thing?
So tokenism, but still, like, that's what does the left do? Like left politics is that you think they don't play that tokenism?
No, I don't. I don't think they play the token. I think they're
as well. But every powerful position has been sort of like either a white man or, you know, you got Nancy Pelosi, and it's debatable how actually powerful she is, like what she can actually do, and like whether she actually is in control of anything. It's not. It's the same everywhere.
Yeah, like, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you there, and I'm going to spit some facts on you right now, right? So when that blue wave happened, you know, a year or two ago, when they turned the house, that demonstrated they were a record number of women of color, women of color.
No, you're right. The house is a different story. But I will already say I'll throw some water on your fire and say the house is meaningless. Like it's everyone there. It's so huge. It's so vast. It's almost just like a little pretend power place, right? Like no one in the house other than the speaker wields any kind of real power, right? Like it's the Senate. It's obviously the presidency, you know, the governors, like the real.
There are sort of also more women senators of color or women senators than ever before. Largely, so I'll say that too. So I'm saying,
yeah, but still, like, look at the Senate. How many? What's the percentage of white men?
Right, and those are all 60-70%. The majority of that 60-70%. Yeah, it's on the Democratic too. But the senators, they're all white on the Republican side. I can't name a single senator of color. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, that's true. That's true. And the thing is too, like, these are what prove the rule, right? Like the rule is that power is exercised by white men. And when we say rule, it's not a law, like, but it's the averages, like it's the majority of the situation. And so, yes, like the fact that we have to even say things like, oh, more than ever, and oh, look at the Republicans, it's like the default.
Look, I'm not disputing what it is. I think we're arguing.
And so it's not. Is that because of the racist American in Michigan? Racist beer drinking American who doesn't exist, because I honestly
we
got to get away from the idea that
they are racist.
Trump supporters
a lot of
are racist, because it's also lazy thinking, but what's your solution?
I'm not saying
if they're racist and they irrationally hate like
that. I think Hillary made when she said, oh, Trump voters are the deplorables. No, that's an incorrect phrasing. The way to phrase that accurately was, not all Trump supporters are deplorables, but all deplorables are Trump supporters.
But the one problem is, the one problem I'll say is that, like, not all deplorables will support Trump.
No, they all will.
But no deplorables will support Hillary Clinton.
They won't. Like, I'm sure there's the occasional outlier, but like that's more the way exception than it is the rule. And I'll build on your larger point. Okay, so.
And what is okay? So the deplorable though is
it's
still only
Trump's
10%
entire
of the population.
Base. That 30% is deplorable.
Nah.
And then there's the extra 10%.
That's lazy thinking again. That's you want to believe. you want to believe that they're like, you know, like they're just this kind of comic villain out of a Mickey Mouse cartoon, like that can't be like even reasoned with.
Yeah.
It's like Bluto.
I do think that.
Olive oil or whatever. But no, like it's
you can do it because you still have a good 70%, right? And many of that 70% are moderate and Republican. Like there's a difference between a Republican and a Trumper. Like if there was an election tomorrow and there was a John McCain or even a Mitt Romney, there are candidates on the Democratic side who I would vote the Republican guy over that, right? Because for what they could be inauthentic, they could be, you know, have no plan, they could have anything. What is happening now is not a Republican thing. They have been consumed, cannibalized by this base, and that has been so mobilized and charged up that now the subculture of racism in America, which had to go underground, is free to roam. It's not a coincidence that you're seeing the highest number of hate attacks in America in the last 3 years. It's no coincidence that there are...
I agree that actual legitimate like 10%ers, those racists have been allowed to come out of the fold and sort of speak out in the open, right? But the majority of the people do not hold those opinions. They just they have grievances that fall in line with what these, you know, these charlatans are preaching, right? Like their fear for their own livelihoods. You know, it falls in line with xenophobia because it's like, you know, keep everyone out and we'll take care of our own, right? Like,
but the thing is, it's got
so
fine. But my point is that
I get that they're out there. I get that they're out there talking, but you know what? At the same time, too, I'm actually kind of happy that like they're out there. Like we can see them now, and like they can't hide who they like. They're saying what they've always sort of been thinking. And like it's not, and the really heartening thing is it's not leading to the mass anti-race movements that we've seen in the past in history. Like there is no sort of open Nazi party like that's openly like anti-Semitic or like, you know, anti, like in
no,
North
there's
America.
Plenty
there's
in North America too.
In Europe, no, like a party that's anti openly anti. You know, Semitic.
Yeah, and that is the present day Republican Party. They've destroyed themselves.
Okay,
not overtly.
They're not
anti-Semitic.
First of all, they're not openly. But they're not openly. They're not openly racist.
To stand by that border
policy
is racist.
They don't hold policies that. Okay, no, but Sam, they don't hold policies like, for instance, that says like, you know, a black person can't run for office in our party. Like they don't have constitutional barriers to like entry the way that real racist parties do and did back in the day that were openly like, no, this guy, we can't have inferior people. Like, no, we don't need your support. Like
my friend, they've taken away. They might have taken away that wording,
like
they're
the openly
same. That ban, when you ban people from a whole bunch of countries and those countries are Muslim majority.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm tired of a lot of this simple thinking. So if this is what is the issue, like that we got a racist party that's out there, what do you do?
So
what's your sort of move? Because I don't need a solution, but I need at least action.
Here's the action plan. The action plan was phase one. Get the fear and the xenophobia out of the equation and talk real facts by a candidate who is not supported by the real threat to America or the populace that are suffering, which is corporate America. That candidate was Bernie Sanders, in my opinion. Okay. Unfortunately, they've suffered a setback with that. He's getting handicapped by the second time. And your girl, Elizabeth Warren, did nothing to help that because even though she's a progressive, she decided to remain silent, whereas every other, you know, moderate, corporate, bootlicking Democrat stood with Biden. Oh,
God, she's changed since the last time we talked about her. She's changed so much.
Trump is a buffoon, but he was right. He did cost Bernie. She did cost Bernie a good 3-4 states on that Super Tuesday.
Yeah,
by lingering around in there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that that would have been phase one. Yeah. Get a polar candidate. Like, I call it the populism of the left. Like, that's what America really needs. Not this xenophobic traditional populism, like a left populism, and pit the two against each other directly. And I think the people, at least the majority, would have been able to see for themselves. That's how you were able to turn the House. And I know you say the House is meaningless, but that's how you really do it. You pit clear alternatives, not more of the same, even if they're slightly more left-leaning. Clear alternatives, have them make a choice. Once that choice is made, all you do is because the numbers are there. Like, people slam Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All as socialist or whatever like that. But the numbers are there. Like, I think there was a study published like 3-4 days ago that said it does work economically, his plan, and it does pay for itself over time. Jeffrey Sachs also said America pays $10,000 per person under a more public system. It would drop down to 5,000, right? Why isn't that happening? Because unfortunately, a lot of the Democrats, like, there's two problems here. Their fear is that a radical left candidate cannot win. But that's totally unsubstantiated. You just saw a radical right guy who they gave no chance of winning completely demolish the competition and win.
It's not their fear. It's okay. We got to get away from the idea that they want to maintain control of the levers of power of the Democratic Party. That's been their intention, and they're sort of winning that. So there's no fear. Like, they're not worried. They know that there's a good chance. Like, they would rather him lose than Sanders win and start the process of reshaping the Democratic Party, putting his guy in as like, you know, head of the DNC, and like having, you know, controlling all the minutia of, you know, party, the party apparatus, right? Like, taking over the positions, bringing in and that's going to happen. Like, it's already sort of working. I mean, like, the AOC movement and stuff like that.
Right.
Like,
so we might, so, smart, so you're saying, how do you have people happen? That you are, have to give, are at least, working even if the it system. Fails, like, you remember when the NDP won the province of Ontario because there was a stark contrast before the previous government? Like, you have to at least give, we've tried everything else. Let's at least try. If the numbers back it on paper, the people need it. It has to happen. But it has to be on a ballot. Like, it has to somehow, the Democratic Party has to move away from this fear mongering that Sanders cannot win the states. Yes, he has some problems because of his comments toward Fidel Castro. And, you know, even though all he said was they have great health care down there. But of course, they're going to use that to distance themselves from his Latino base and the South or whatever.
That didn't work. It didn't work, though. Like, it was just a talking point on CNN, and it didn't even resonate with anybody. Nobody gave a damn that Sanders was in or talked about Castro, because most Americans look at Cuba. But that's, like, I wish I could go there. It looks kind
of
cool.
I think you're underplaying that. That was one of the reasons that they said Sanders couldn't carry the South. He would lose Florida.
But he did. No, he didn't. Like, the South that he didn't carry is old world, racist ass, you know, third world country
but
America.
But those are the
right?
people
like
who need
Arkansas
him the most.
And Alabama and all those shitty ass states who vote
but
for
why?
Trump.
Like, that's
those
what
are
I'm
already
saying.
Foregone for the to general. Get... You know that, right? Like, all his. All.
But why?
No, because they always go Republican. Like, their states. There's states that go Republican. There's states that go Democratic. And that's just been the way it is. New York is never going to go Republican.
But that's what I'm saying.
In a presidential election. That's never happened. It's never going to. Like, in the modern era. California, neither. No, but you got to stop thinking that, like, oh, yeah, we're going to, like, create a system that where, you know, like, we're going to run a candidate that the whole country is going to go blue.
No. See, I think your thinking is a little limited. And it's not, like...
Oh my God! You're.
But it's
you're
not like I'm giving you naive. Hot facts like it's right just, now. Like, too... look at the example of what happened in Alabama. You said the Senate's important. Like, they elected a blue senator in the reddest state in America, right? It is possible. It is possible.
Still,
right? Like,
okay, Okay, we'll see it. Like, I mean, we got a few. I think the Sanders vote has unfortunately sailed, but I think,
and that's Nate Buttigieg. Yeah. I liked him as a candidate for some of the things he stood for, but dude wrote his high school essay, like the one that won the national essay contest. Call it on Bernie Sanders, saying he was the voice of courage in a whole system that was backwards. Dude gives his vote to an established guy after writing, like,
we need a word.
To me, that just seems totally counterintuitive.
We need Sam. Here's some homework for like one of our next podcasts. We need to come up with a term for like the overachieving high school nerds who are like presidents of the school and who like achieved and did everything, but will never do anything that's actually useful.
How about society. We call them? They're how about we call them the smart. Wands?
That's it. What is the word for that?
And I think you know who we're referring to on that.
I mean, it's an allusion to an illusion of a time that's gone by.
The Wongs.
But okay.
So like as that. Reference, we
like
had
Wong
a,
style,
we had
a... you know, like Wong it, you know, like. Because that's what it is, like the butt the butt kissing. No, you don't,
let
need,
it sit
you
there.
Don't need to reference okay. this. Just let it sit. But yeah, so the that's the problem though. Like all these Wong types out there that are just like, you know, like they it's resume building. It's like they don't give a damn about like actually, you know, fighting for, you know, a historical voice. Or maybe if they do, they think they can do it and still be, you know, celebrated, that it's not a fight. Like you look at like anything sort of gained and all the like a lot of the best presidents getting assassinated after, you know, like putting up the fight that's necessary to put some fear mm-hmm. into the people that control mm-hmm. the wealth, like the power, right? Like I don't know if Sanders had that stomach. I mean, maybe a lot of this stuff caught him off guard. I don't think he ever thought initially that he had a chance, or he just thought he'd get in there and start talking about things. I don't think they knew that. I don't think they had a chance. I mean, the fear was that they were the DNC was always gonna hamstring mm-hmm. them, right? Like even if they ran away with Super Tuesday, I was worried that like something would like Michelle Obama would come in or something, or like, you know, Hillary Clinton shows up and it's like all of a sudden you got like, and then the super delegates were totally allowed to, you know, there was no way mm-hmm. they were going to run away with the delegate count because they just didn't have enough. Sanders doesn't have enough presence within the party to get in those, you know, like those like Tammany Hall type votes, you know, where they, you just run into the bars and drag out the usual suspects, like the guys that vote Democrat, right? Like they don't have those lists. They don't like the people that have been voting
mm-hmm.
for years and you can count on them. All you got to do is call them up. They didn't have those deep networks that a lot of those, like, you know, like in South Carolina, especially a lot of those, like, is it Clyburn who's in South Carolina?
Well, Lindsey Graham is the senator from there. I don't know who the other one is.
I think it's James Clyburn. Or maybe James Clyburn rings a bell. But anyway, some guy in South Carolina sort of broke, like he's, I think that's where Biden sort of proved, like showed his expertise, which is like, you know, party politics. The man knows how to like speak to the specific people that will get him
mm-hmm.
the numbers that he needs on that day, right? Sanders doesn't know those people, and the one, like, it's great having thousands of volunteers and sort of like endless
resources, he's not a
but
political
networker.
It's
difficult to like
saying
like harness that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's been the critique of him since his thing, and I don't feel like it's as valid of a critique as they're playing out in TV, because I don't think he ever had.
Yeah, because
a chance
then he turned off his base.
If he played the political networker, like he doesn't have that ability. Yeah, like if he has to go and make
a
deal,
that was
a
great
say,
impression.
You know, we'll
he
have Medicare
like
for all, but it'll be we'll bring in a few of these. These insurance executives to help us iron things out, you know. And like if he does that, he's done. Like it's not a
so what I
actually
so what I would say. So you're saying, so what we'll are see. The steps? So I think Sanders. I think he had his left knee knocked out of him on the Hillary run. He had his right knee knocked out of him on this run. So I don't think it's going to be his. I think his time is done. But his ideas, hopefully, will live for a long time, if not become the norm. Like 4 years ago, the idea of Medicare for all, college for all, erasing student debt, Green New Deal, all these things were like wildly like inconceivable. But now they're part of the mainstream, right? So I think there is.
One thing that I thought was going to be great about a Sanders administration, if it was ever going to happen, was I thought that AOC was going to have a front seat to the power system. Like she would be given like a view of that. And like, I think there's no one better in the country to sort of like give that education to, because I think she's got that on lockdown. So what I'm trying to say is like, there is massive hope, obviously, for that next
right and, that, and that's where I'm going. So you're saying, what are
your
the
house
steps?
People okay, your congress two paths types right
to like this, right? Like one, Sanders carries the torch and then it's a foil pick, let the public choose. And in that situation, much like the blue wave, I think a lot of people that people wrote off, like people in the South or, you know, Ottawa, like I think they all would have given their votes to Sanders if there was a one-on-one kind of thing. Unfortunately, Warren stayed in the race too long just to siphon votes. Everyone ganged up and gave Biden the thing. And I mean, right?
You're like tripping over themselves.
Right? Like,
dude, that was insane.
Like, did you see Kamala Harris?
Like, when it was happening, I was like, really? Is it? Is the establishment being this like it was funny to watch the establishment be that desperate though, because you know that there were some severe deals
like
thrown out.
Your girl
out. Like
Kamala Harris,
these guys
completely
are
completely hamstrung like Joe Biden, and then fully endorsed him
two days later,
when she dropped out. I was like, what are you doing? You just said he was an unscrupulous guy who was a racist who voted for all these racist policies, and you throw your support behind him? Like, what is this?
Oh my god! So much. Like,
so that's
just careerism. Like, I don't know. Like, it's, and that's why these are the most pathetic people.
No,
that somehow
they have
rise
political
to the
networks
top because
and they're
good
scared
at memorizing
to jeopardize
something.
Their political
like
networks for the greater good.
No, but how do they get there? Like, they just, what I'm saying is like, what got them through their schools into like the best schools? Like, Buttigieg is a friggin' Oxford scholar. What the hell does that say about Oxford?
No, Ram,
like, I mean,
you're confusing Wongism with real leadership. Not... Like, that's the thing. You need a leader who has more leadership than Wongism. They are all Wongs. I agree.
And they're all, the problem is they're all Wongs.
It is all Wong.
It's all
Wong.
It's
definitely
all
Wong.
Wong.
And that's what's wrong with the system, right? So here's the last thing I'll say for today. I'll just put a point on what we were talking about and then move to my broader, my concluding point that I have. You know, so you're saying, what would it take? It would take either the foil, Sanders versus Trump, or what can happen is a moderate versus Trump, moderate probably going to lose, hopefully not. But that those ideas fester for another 4 years and they fester with a new generation that has a little bit more political networking, not to the point of selling out, but enough acumen to balance what's needed in terms of networking and grassroots progressive support. And I'm confident and I'm hopeful that, you know, like, because things are going to get really bad.
A little
Here's
more
my
desperation
forecast. Trump
or...
wins again and he's just going to...
Yeah. Well, no, if he wins,
and
again,
then,
they can let the country go into a
recession
right? Because he won't
to,
care. Like at this point, he doesn't care if the
plug it
stock market tanks
debt,
or whatever.
They're going to scrap all the institutions.
Yeah, they won't. They
and
won't even try.
Scrap
what they'll do.
All the
entitlements. Problem, the thing is,
that's where this is going. That's how they're going to try to.
Then that's the thing. Like that's the great part about a good recession. If you're on the power side of things, you can make a lot of money in a recession. You can like control exactly where, you know, government financing is going. You can like cut the knees out of other things, like you say, take out entitlements and like, you know,
and then,
sit,
and then
sit
I'm saying what I'm saying is
actual death.
I hope,
you know,
that
as like
will be
homeless,
the last
homeless people
in
and stuff
so-called
die.
Red states where there's a lot of unemployment, because they're going to be like, wait a second, this is way worse. Like, it's already way worse than it was 4 years ago, but it's going to get to the point where there's nothing left. There's no net safety net at all. And then you're going to have a real choice to make. Are we going to, you talked about self-preservation. It's going to get to that point. We're going to be like, fuck this. This is ridiculous. We were completely, we have nothing anymore coming into our pocket. Because now there's a lot of government, like there's a lot of entitlements. The farm industry is lopsidedly, like artificially held up. A lot of the manufacturing too, outdated industries, coal, all that stuff is artificially propped.
And at that point, Sam, at that point, my question to you, at that point, does change happen through peaceful democratic action?
No, I don't think it's going to go the guillotine way, because there are too many checks and balances against the poor and impoverished that way. Like, you saw how they crushed.
But I think what we're learning in this election,
unfortunately, I disagree. But it'll take a lot longer. You have to build democratic action from the bottom.
There's too many entrenched systems, but the thing is, if the damage is so deep by the slow ass time it's taking for them to get organized, what the fuck's the point? Like,
well, we're gonna see either way, we're gonna see in 4 years, because I think that by that time the tipping point will have reached, if not sooner, because once that Trump wins re-election, that next day he's gonna cut every entitlement there is. He's already on the books by cutting Social Security, Medicare, all these stuff that's in his budget right now. He's gonna double, if not triple, those cuts, right, while at the same time continuing these payroll cuts and all this leisure bailouts, shale bailouts and stuff. And that's the last point I wanted to touch on today. Like, it's almost awe-inducing, the fact that they're going around saying, oh, Bernie Sanders is a communist. You know, America, we don't want it to become a communist regime. We don't want it to become a socialist era. Like, my friends, and anyone who's really listening and really paying attention, like, America is already socialist. It is already communist. Unfortunately, it's a one percenter communist. It's a one percenter socialist. Every social safety net imaginable is there for the rich and entitled. Lower corporate tax, bailouts, bankruptcy laws, corporate, what are those that Amazon gets? Those corporate subsidies, paying zero corporate tax. Like, it is already social. The best, everything.
The
everything
best,
is there.
The best
lobbying,
healthcare that
like all
has
this
ever
stuff,
been imagined.
It is already socialist. It is already communist. It's even worse than that, except it's only there for the people who need it the least. Plus, is there, to be fair.
And who aren't even, and the worst part is these people, like, we look to them. And they're given this aura of wealth and power and prestige, but they've been failing for a good 40 years, man. Everything they've tried, like,
yeah, you can't win a war in modernity. You cannot win a traditional war in an era of modernity. It's impossible.
Like,
you saw that in Vietnam. You saw it in Iraq. Impossible.
Losing to China, like, Russia's beating them. Everybody, like, everything they're doing with the best empire
in the world,
this is what they've achieved. The ruling elite, the Wongs, and that's the problem, right? Like, we can't keep throwing these people up there, and I think the fact that most of America will stay home this election, and let Donald Trump win.
Unfortunately,
again,
but.
I think it's completely justified. I mean, I don't see any other way. They can't give it to Biden.
But the thing is, here's the thing.
They can't let Hillary Clinton win again.
We talked about how,
like, a vote for Biden is a vote for Hillary Clinton.
Jean Chrétien? Joe Biden also is cut from that Jean Chrétien cloth. He has said some of the most outrageous things, and not just decades ago. Even recently, he said some of the most recent things. And he's still churning forward. So I hope that that Jean Chrétienism in him carries the day.
Even, like,
I'm not optimistic, but at least there's hope.
No, I mean, it's just that The problem is, I don't think you're better off. I can't legitimately argue.
No, I could argue that. I could certainly argue.
Better off
you wouldn't get
Biden
the
presidency than Trump. And maybe with like the people surrounding him, yes, if like he is cabinet. But like if it's just the same shit, like if it's the same people that are like, you know, Hillary Clinton laughing when Gaddafi gets killed and like that Libya becomes a
the key
a
is not
state.
So much in
like,
this election
great.
Cycle. I tell you what,
awesome. You know, like I mean, that's it's just more that it's more that bullshit. It's just like propping up. It's propping up Ukraine and like prodding Russia. And like, it's like
so
pushing the world into a, like another Cold War, like that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
like great. This time though, Russia will be aligned with China, and
anyway,
they will.
So what I'd also like to touch on briefly, if I could.
Anyway,
that last point
that's a whole
raised,
other topic.
I think the 2020 election is important not for the presidency,
but
for the Senate. If they're able to turn that Senate, like you saw, like 400 plus bills are just sitting in Mitch McConnell's graveyard, right? Like, I think that is the way, that is the hope. Like, if Sanders wins, for sure, that's hope. But if Biden wins, I do think things would be incrementally better or even substantially better. I'll hope for Biden, right? But even if it's not, the key hope is the Senate. Getting these graveyard bills passed, that's how you can really get shit done and have the masses feel that change that's just sitting in a bottleneck. Yeah, so let's see.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, sure.
I'm trying, man.
Like, there's a lot of idealism in your voice. You're like that Bill.
I think nonviolent resistance can go a long way even in today. If you can give people...
I'm not... No one's pushing for violence. I'm just saying
shit
happens when a system is stressed. That's it. Yeah. And I think we're close. I think these shenanigans by the Democratic Party are just making things a little worse. Because I really feel
they're not. They can't.
I don't
that's
think
the, thing,
the majority
right?
of
they,
Bernie
just what Hillary did. Hillary lost a lot. They can't vote
for Biden.
To her credit, she won the popular vote.
They cannot.
But a lot of Sanders fans stayed home because they were pissed off at the way that happened. Yes, this time there's not that super delegate shenanigans that there was the first time around, right? And Biden is more likable than Hillary and doesn't have all the overt scandals, although Biden has his own share of them, right? But at the same time, like, here was what Sanders' downfall was also. The young people who we thought would come out in droves to support Sanders, they just didn't come to the polls, even in the primaries. In the primaries alone. So I think that hurt Sanders too. But anyway, long story short, I continue to be hopeful. But I mean, I hope in one of two scenarios, things work out. Either Sanders wins, you get a clear file for the president. If not, Biden comes in. Maybe he can sneak his way in. If not, the key is to turning the Senate and try to get some of these progressive quote unquote things on the table more frequently to the point where some non-Wong who is bright, like a Sanders, but has a little bit more political networking ability, gets in there.
Of course. Yeah, but like you can see it. You can see it in Sanders. He doesn't give a fuck.
And I'm not saying
like,
you gotta grub the
corporate. He doesn't care about the damn grades.
I'm
like, he's not up there grubbing, right? Like, he legitimately wants to try. Like, but he has his, like Sanders has his motivations.
It's not, but it's
that's
not
like
realistic without some ability
right?
to political.
And I don't think that's a bad motivation.
In.
Like, I think when you go out there, like you try to be some. It's not okay. No, I'm not talking. I'm not talking about like I. And Sanders is not even like the argument. The real argument with Sanders is not like all this stuff is going to change overnight. You're going to have Medicare like within a week. What Sanders represents is a voice within the White House that is not openly antagonistic to,
right,
you know, even beyond that. He'll be helpful, like he'll be showing up like at those rallies and things like that, right? Like,
so what I'll say is this,
like,
my
first time
die,
in,
so
in
have
50
to cut
years
this,
or
I'll leave
more
you on
than
this
that
question.
Since like
I'll end on this question. We can pick it up Friday or the next day we do a pod.
We gotta cut it.
What
minutes.
Do you think of a Biden Sanders ticket? So let's don't say anything on that now. Don't say anything. Think on it. Let's pick up on that on Friday.
I think if they give him, if they...
No. I don't want to hear it. All right. Think on it.
Let's see. I don't think, first of all, I'm going to say...
Okay.
It's not going to happen because they're never going to allow Sanders anywhere near an administration. Okay,
no, I still want to talk about
that guy.
More.
They so hate Friday, that guy more than we'll Trump. We'll kick that off. So let's end on that.
All right, buddy. Great talk. All right.